Let's address the flat state issue again. I know you've heard it before, and yes, so have we, but it's important to know why Kansas isn't flat if you're going to understand Cheyenne Bottoms. As you drive through this part of the byway on the north side of the Nature Conservancy and Cheyenne Bottoms Wildlife Area, look around you. Gently rolling hills undulate across the plain. Depending on the season, they may be verdant green, golden yellow, rich copper, or possibly snowy white. But the hills are there. If you look in the distance, you'll notice that some of the hills seem to rise up dramatically from the prairie. These bluffs rise more than 100 feet above the basin floor. They were created hundreds of thousands of years ago as salt water from a prehistoric sea percolated down through the ground, eroded the limestone beneath, and created a natural sink, the Cheyenne Bottoms Basin. That's a pretty simple explanation. And if you want more detail about its formation, you can find it at the Kansas Wetlands Education Center and at www.kansaswetlandsandwildlifescenicbyway.com. Soon you will come to the north entrance of Cheyenne Bottoms. When you get there, turn in. Carl Grover, a field supervisor of the Cheyenne Bottoms Wildlife Area, tells you what you'll find.
Cheyenne Bottoms is a natural land sink, approximately 41,000 acres in size. It has been a marsh for at least 100,000 years, and the people of Kansas own 20,000 acres of that 41,000-acre basin, and it is managed by the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks. The Nature Conservancy owns and manages an additional 8,000 acres. The balance is still in private hands. So of the 41,000, 28,000 acres of that entire Bottoms Basin is managed for wildlife.
These unique wetlands are managed for wildlife and for people to enjoy. Birdwatchers, hunters, naturalists, and everyday visitors all have the opportunity to experience a natural treasure. When you reach the entrance, I invite you to drive in, explore the causeways, and just witness the amazing variety of birds and other animals. While you're here, consider this. You are at the most important migration point for shorebirds in North America. Hundreds of species rely on this area for rest and food before they continue their journey. Swans, cranes, pelicans, geese, and ducks, just to name a few. There are too many to list here, but you can pick up a complete list of bird species at the visitor and education centers. For more than 40 years, Ed Martinez has banded and studied birds in this region.
I banded anything that had wings out there except the insects.
Banding birds makes it possible to track their migrations. Where and when did they begin their flights? Where will they end? Where do they stop for food? How long does it take? How many survive? Many times the answers surprise even the experts. Many migratory birds travel thousands and thousands of miles, and if you're lucky enough to be here during the spring and fall migrations, you may see hundreds of thousands of birds. But at any time of year, you will find some species that need this wetlands complex to thrive.
Well, birds look for some place where they can rest, fatten up, continue their migration either to the north or to the south. Some of these birds make very long flights at one jump. They have to have the fuel to be able to do this. And you get some of those little sandpipers, and by the time they've rested and fueled up, they're about twice the size as when they arrived, because they've arrived low weights, run out of energy, and they've got to have some place to fuel up, and this is one of the areas where they do that.
This fuel is one of the most unique parts of the Bottoms. Hidden in the mud and the muck is a powerful source of food. Mike Cargill tells more.
Bloodworms are one of my favorite subjects in the whole wide world, let me tell you. Cheyenne Bottoms, is an incredible area for birds to feed in because of the bloodworms. Bloodworms are an invertebrate, and they're a larva of the midge. And we have such a high concentration of bloodworms at Cheyenne Bottoms, which is an incredible fuel for birds, that they're willing to fly miles and miles and miles to get there. And then they're able to feed for a period of time primarily on bloodworms, and then that's where they build the energy to continue their trip on south.
It is more than just the birds who rejuvenate here. And for humans, it's not just about feeding the body. It is also a place where people come to replenish the soul.
You're all by yourself. You don't see anything else. You're the only one in the whole world that's out there. And all you are is with the rest of these little creatures. When you get there at 3 o'clock in the morning, everything's still. The blackbirds aren't awake yet. You can hear the other birds. And when you walk along the edge of the marsh, you have calls from your killdeer and your plovers. They walk in front of you, and they're calling the whole time. Or you listen to the rails early in the morning calling, or the bittern. Sometimes the smell can overwhelm you, but the birds themselves have a unique smell to them that's unlike anything else.
Other outdoorsmen are the hunters who also find the unexpected when they are in the bottoms. Carl Grover remembers an experience he had with his son.
This one particular morning, we set out our decoys and we're sitting in the cattail. And I couldn't tell you if any ducks flew by or not. I don't remember. But I do remember we heard this noise behind us, and we were probably 6 feet apart from each other and in cattail, so we couldn't see each other very well. But I heard this rustling coming from behind us. And here comes this muskrat. And he's just swimming through the cattails. And there's a pad that he had made earlier by cutting off cattails. And he climbs up on top of that, and he is between my son and I. So he's like 3 feet from us. And we're both just sitting there watching this guy, and he starts grooming himself and messing around. He's probably there 3-4 minutes. And he plumps in the water, and he swims off. And my son just said, "Man, that was neat." And it wasn't 30 minutes later, he comes back. Comes up, does the same thing, and then off he goes, and we didn't see him again. That made the day. Didn't matter. We shot, didn't shoot a duck. Didn't matter. We didn't see a duck. We were out there We were in there, the marsh. We experienced what goes on out there.
Experiencing nature, being in the environment. This is the common ground between the different groups who love and protect these wetlands. Of course, preserving these wetland and grassland areas for future generations, ironically, does not come naturally. Active resource management is required.
Initially, when the state started acquiring the ground in the 1940s, they incorporated into not only the land acquisition, but also development of the basin. And that included construction of dikes, dividing the lower portions of the basin into 5 managed pools. And it also included construction of an inlet system, which allows the manager to divert water from the Arkansas River, Dry Creek, and Wet Walnut Creek.
In addition to the water flows, the Department of Wildlife and Parks also manages the marsh and upland areas with controlled burns, tree removal, and eradicating invasive plant species.
And that's one of the neat things about managing a property like this. The two single most threatened ecosystems in North America right now are wetlands and grasslands. And managers here at the bottoms have the ability to do something for both, which is kind of a neat aspect of the job.
Neat though it may be, free it is not. Many people are surprised to learn where the money comes from.
One of the things that has impacted wildlife conservation in the United States, probably the most important piece of legislation that has ever been passed, was passed by the federal government in 1937. It was called the Federal Aid in Wildlife Restoration Act, better known as the Pittman-Robertson Act. What that did was place a federal excise tax on sporting arms and ammunition. The federal government collects that tax, turns it over to a branch of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Federal Aid Office, and they then distribute that money out to the states And how much each state gets is dependent upon how many hunting licenses they sell and the area of that state.
It's important to provide for the management of these wetlands. It is a proven fact that migratory birds need these wetlands and marshes for their very survival. So too does the rest of the food chain. But let's not forget that we need it too. Nature and its gifts nourishes our souls. Along this scenic byway, consider this.
Without places like this, their life will be diminished. You know, that sounds cheesy or overused, but and some people would say, oh, I couldn't care less if it's... Yeah, you do. Go to Walmart here in Great Bend in the fall, and I don't care if you're walking in or out of that store, there's usually a flock of geese going overhead. And 9 times out of 10, they're up looking at them. If the bottoms wasn't here, the geese may not be here. So yeah, it's going to impact their life. They may not know it, but it's going to, and if it's not here, their life's going to be just a bit more diminished.
Take your time here. If the roads are not muddy or slick, drive the causeways. Again, stop and walk around. Life is full of experiences just waiting to happen. I hope you enjoy this one.